episode 6 of Beards and Banners. I'm Brian Williams.
And I'm Matt McCrory.
And we are coming to you tonight with several things to talk about. Now, the first thing that we should probably talk about, Matt, is that we took a little hiatus for a week and didn't get an episode in the books last week. And I'll be honest with you, I'm a little ashamed of us.
3 days late to air that episode, so please forgive us, but we were kind of running around with our heads cut off.
That's true. We get into some weeks where things get to piling up. I suppose that's, I would guess that's not unique to us, probably. I would suppose some of our listeners can identify with a little bit of William's luck and life just happening and things going to where maybe your schedule has to get bumped. And that happened to us this week a little bit. We had meetings and places we had to go. You're a fair one and have responsibilities there at school. And we just couldn't get a time at a decent hour to get on here together and go through and record one. But we're going to try to make up for it tonight, right?
Yes, we are. And I think we have one great little episode planned.
I think so. I'm excited to get into some of this stuff. And I sure haven't gotten out of the Christmas spirit since then. In fact, I will tell you, and I'll admit, and we'll get to this. We'll talk about it. I got on my phone and created just a strictly Christmas song playlist, even to get myself in the mood when I'm in the barn or driving down the road and I'm not listening to podcasts. Matt, here's what's on the docket for tonight. I know that we've had some listener questions, and we've decided to add a new segment tonight called It's Not a Stupid Question. And so we're going to talk about that. We're definitely going to dive off into the Christmas spirit and spend some time discussing some Christmas items, songs, playlists. I've even got a little game to play. We played reindeer games last time. This time I've got a game for you, Matt.
I can
play a little Christmas movie game and get some opinions on some Christmas movies, or if they are considered Christmas movies. There's a little preview of that, I guess. Then we're going to dive in to some helpful hints, and we're going to call that segment Parturition Preparation and Helpful Hints on Having Babies. And so I'm excited to maybe cover a few things there and just talk about some basic, broad, generic stuff that maybe we think about and we think is helpful, and hopefully everybody else out there thinks about. But if not, hopefully you get something out of that segment in terms of just kind of being prepared for when that next generation hits the ground. And then we're going to close out the episode kind of the way we always have, and what I think is becoming one of our listener favorites, and that's kind of our motivational section for the week. And that's this week is you, my man, and I'm excited to hear what you've got for us. I love those messages, so I'm excited to get into it. It's going to be a great episode.
I'm excited, and you know what? I think being the Christmas season right now, and it's also the farrowing season right now, mm-hmm. You know, there's going to be some highlights, and there's going to be some really high times over the next month. There might be some low lights too. So hopefully our episode will bring you a little bit of joy this holiday season, because, hey, we know farrowing, we know lambing, and we know those early January steers coming.
Who knows? Somewhere out there, there might be some marches being born right now. We don't know. We're not going to call a spade, but it could happen. Stranger things have happened.
There might be some February pigs born. I don't know.
That's right. We might be having some February pigs. We might be having some March calves. Who knows? Who knows what's going out there in the great wide world?
And Beards and Banners does not necessarily condone any of this. We just say that in theory it could be happening right now.
Here's an edit. Our legal team has just advised us that we do not condone and or endorse any aging and inappropriate dating of offspring. So if you're doing that, good luck. You know, Matt, I know that you've had some Williams luck this week.
It wasn't
of some farrowing gone awry, some trailer tire issues, long days, short nights, great weather, of course, always
very great good weather
this time of the year. And it always reminds me, and I know that probably out there, you know, has to be a former FFA member or two, and maybe even a current FFA member or two. And you and I have a little experience there. And it always reminds me of the line from the FFA Creed, "For I know the joys and the discomforts of an agricultural life." And let's face it, some weeks are full of discomforts.
It is uncomfortable over here. Let's just say it. discomforts awry. So today, just as I thought, boy, this week couldn't get too much worse, I'm bringing my trailer over to the fairing house. I hit the creek and the trailer starts dragging. What could possibly that be? Like, did the ramp come down? What is it? And I drag that sucker up the hill and I kind of look and, hey, the trailer is kind of crooked a little bit. And I was like, what is going on? Well, I lost a tire in the creek. Don't have any idea how that happens, but you remember how I told you and told the listening audience that, hey, Williams luck doesn't run off. Like, it's not contagious.
Doesn't rub off. It's not. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. in the last five episodes, buddy.
You might. I apologize, Matt. I fear that perhaps some of that is rubbed off a little bit. But it's yeah, okay. We don't worry, listeners. We experience our fair share of catastrophes on Beards and Banners. And we sympathize with you when you have yours.
So I've always said for years, like, we both are livestock trainers and we like to help out with kids evaluating. And on those scenario sheets, they've always said limited labor. I always say limited labor is that ag teacher that is working 60 hours a week. And then all of a sudden, like, hey, we're trying to farrow a couple on the side, or, hey, I have a great idea. Let's raise show steers.
Like, oh my God.
And then, like, all of a sudden, like, oh,
hey, you're finally done at 11 o'clock at night on a Tuesday. Let's go home and check things. Oh, what do you mean that cow calved in a ditch full of water? What do you mean? I've got broken water lines in the barn. Oh, the boar got out and bred that gilt that wasn't bred yet. And he's a Michon teaser boar. Or, hey, that Burke laid down and had 17, but she only ate 13 of them. So that's
good. She was outside.
And she was outside when she did it. We've had those instances. And right now, I'll tell you, Matt, I'm on cloud nine. Like, I'm floating along. My life is grand because my March pigs aren't due until next week. And so we've kind of just been
for the record, listeners, they're all crossbreds.
That's right. You don't age. You're not going to mouth them hogs. If you're not showing them when they're 17 months old, I don't know what to tell you. That's a quick sway. If you want bone and hair, kids, show them when they're 2-year-olds.
Hey, I have to say something before we get started. We did it. Do you know what we did?
I have no idea, Matt.
We put Riz over the top because it is the number one new word in all the land in 2023.
And you know,
that our mention.
Oh, 100%. 100%. 100%. I am 73% sure that we were the deciding factor in Riz being the number one word added to the dictionary this year. I think people sympathized with us.
Mm-hmm.
As we are, I'm not going to say old. I don't believe that's the right word. Generationally challenged, perhaps, in terms of some of the newest, coolest lingo. And like I said on the last episode, there was a lot of people that reached out. I had a lot of Snapchats. I had a lot of texts. Hey, this is what Riz means. This is what it is. And then all of a sudden, you know, they say, you know, if you're saying, man, you're in around your house and you're carrying your phone, man, I need a new toilet seat. Then all of a sudden you're scrolling through Facebook and every ad's for toilet seats. I swear that's a real thing, because
for sure
everything I saw for the next week, 10 days had something to do with Riz.
Really?
And including that story. That story pops up on one of my social media feeds about Riz being the number one new word added. So you're welcome, society and culture at large, for Beards and Banners jumping on the Riz boat and taking it all the way in.
Advertisers, we could do the same for you.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. You've got a product, you've got a buzzword, you got a new term you just want to make up that sounds really dumb that you want us to throw out into the universe and give meaning to. We're happy to do it.
Hey, I have two new words for you today.
Oh, Matt, I can't wait.
Okay. The first one I learned the other day from a kid at a 4-H meeting. And they were talking about this new drink. And they were saying, man, they took a drink of it. Kid never take it. He says, man, that's gas. And I said, whoa, you're not drinking gas. He says, no.
I've always kind of been taught to not do that.
Gas means it's awesome. And I'm like, man, that's kind of cool. So, like, you know how we used to say, man, that's dope. That's cool. Like, that's awesome, you know?
Hey, off the hook, so off the chain. Hook,
yeah. Yeah. So that is the new thing. Like, so if you like something, you're like, man, that's gas.
I've been gassed. I don't know that.
The kid at the 4-H meeting was sitting next to another kid while he was explaining to it. That kid says, well, I've tried gas. It doesn't taste very good. And I was like, what? He says, it dries my mouth out. I'm like, what is going on? Okay. Ooh. So anyway, the other one is this. I really like that. Like Taylor Swift used this about Travis Kelce and how metal he was. Okay. And so what that means is it's kind of like got the intestinal fortitude.
Like hardcore.
Yeah. Kind of like, okay, he manned up a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. So
that's
metal.
Kind of like you know, like people say he's got that dog in him. He's got that dog.
There's a lot of guys at the Millwood dances a long time ago that after that dance was over with, they had a lot of dog in them. And well, they were fighting, and I was the one watching against the wall.
Spectating. I had a lot of spectators.
Do not include me in this. I want you to know that I am okay with everyone here. And I'm not ripping on anyone.
Can't we all just get along?
Yeah. Let me just get out the door and we will be fine.
You know, I'm going to add those. I'm writing those down, Matt.
Metal and
gas and metal.
Brian, that lifesaver, it's gas.
That lifesaver is gas. I like it.
I'm a keep it on kind of a guy sometimes too.
Yeah. Gas. Yeah.
Ooh, a swell. Oh, it's gas for sure.
Gas.
Yeah. So
did you see how much that product, did you see how much Game On that guy used? That was metal.
Oh man, it's gas.
All right. I got it, man. I'm gonna start adding those in.
I think it is good. We can use that as an advertising slogan, maybe.
Right. I like it.
And metal, like, man, did you see that guy pull that calf out? He's got metal.
That calf got away, kicked three people, ran over a grandma, and that guy just walked up and caught it. That's metal.
Yeah.
There you go. Metal. I like it.
Man.
I like
it. Hey, awesome. You are welcome, listening audience.
Betcha. Hey, let's see if we 2024, right around the corner. Let's see if we can't get those into the verbiage commonly used by the folks out in the world.
Hey, I found out today that in 5 short episodes, we are in the top 10% in the nation in number of listens already.
You've got to be kidding me.
Nope. Hey, we're gas.
We are gas. Hey, that fact is pretty metal. Really.
Hey, it is. Hey, speaking of that, we have a pretty large base of our listening audience that are not stockmen, believe it or not. They like to hear us riff about some Christmas songs today and some different things like that. And they have asked me to kind of go into some detail.
So what you're saying is maybe they don't know a Santa Gertrudis from Santa Claus.
They do not know, nor would they have any idea what a Santa Gertrudis is. A cross between an elephant and a rhino. Elephino.
Matt, pulling out the dad jokes tonight. I love it. I love it.
I am a father of three boys. So one of them thinks I'm hilarious. The other ones do not. So, hey, but we have a segment today called It's Not a Stupid Question. And this question basically is brought on because we have a listener named Aaron that sometimes has no idea what we're talking about. And they'd like to know a little bit about, hey, in the livestock industry, what exactly are we looking for? And if we could scale it down on our terminology a little bit, it would be good. But I also want to scale it back up because I want to hear from the judging pro himself. When you're judging a show, what are you looking at? So when we start out just by doing that, I always talk about the four B's. Okay. You want them big, high performing is big. You want them to have bone to be durable. You want them to have body capacity, which is rib and belly, because two things are going to go in that belly, feed and water. And the more feed and water that they consume, the more they'll grow. And that we sell animals by the pound. And then butt. I like big butts and I cannot lie. Sir Mix-a-Lot was talking about heifers. The other one, the S on that, on the four B's, I always talk about structure and skeleton. And being able to walk, being able to move and be athletic is an important thing, Aaron. So thank you for your question.
Heck yeah. Shout out to Aaron. That's a great question. Certainly not a stupid question. You know, I agree wholeheartedly, Matt, and I love how you put that because, you know, a big part of your day and a big part of my day is taking things that we have a tendency to overcomplicate maybe in the livestock industry and getting them stripped down to their most basic kind of functions in terms of how do we look at this stuff and what's important to us. I would say on the biggest, broadest, most simplistic scale, when it comes to market animals, okay, steers, market lambs, market hogs, market goats, so much of what we try to do as livestock producers is designed to meet industry and maybe even bigger than that, consumer demand. Okay. So when we're trying to produce a steer, what we're trying to do is make that animal have enough product that they are feasible to produce and economically viable to produce for the producer. They fit the industry standards in terms of what can go down the rail at the processing facility, but yet that's still a quantity of product or meat that the consumer's happy with. And especially steers, beyond that, we want that to be a quality product. And we can't do that without some fat on that animal because the outside fat is what lays on the intramuscular fat, which is marbling, which is what makes a steak juicy and taste good. And we're all about them being juicy and tasting good, right? And so how we evaluate steers then, whether it's just looking at cattle in the feedlot or whether we're judging a big, fancy cattle show like the American Royal or Denver, radiates outward from that one centralized point. Got to have enough product, got to have enough fat to meet industry and consumer demand. Okay. And for me, that's kind of where the steer deal starts. Now, if I'm judging a show, there's a lot of extras. We hear that word a lot, right, Matt? Like you go to a show and somebody's on the mic and this one's, you know, he's big and he's stout and he's burly and blah, blah. And then he just so many extras. And what they mean by that is that that thing's got some things that are harder to make and some bells and whistles, if you will, that kind of up the style points that give that animal a little more show ring presence and a little more show animal look. And to me, if I'm judging a show, I'm looking for the one that has those things, that has those extras, that looks like a show animal, that's presented well. So I guess one of the first things that I look at is balance. And balance is maybe the hardest thing to explain because unfortunately, it means different things to different people. For me, balance is all about proportions and that animal fitting together and blending those pieces of their body and their skeleton together relatively seamlessly and looking like it was all meant to be one thing. In other words, sometimes we get those animals that are extremely cool-necked, but then they're in long-necked and choke-necked and all that cool stuff, but then they're incredibly jammed up and short-bodied, and they just, nothing matches. Is it cool? Yeah. Does it match? No. Does it affect their balance? Yeah, sometimes it does in a negative way. I want those animals to have balance and look. And so to me, that's super important. I got to cover the basics first, obviously, the stuff that we talked about. Are they stout enough in terms of muscle or product or width? And skeletal width is such a big thing to me. How wide is that skeleton? And I'll tell you why. Everybody's asked me, why do you like them so pulled open, so big, so wide, so stout? Because I think people confuse that a lot of times with muscle, right? Like if they think they're wide, that well, they're heavy muscled. And then they look at a wide female and they think, wow, she's too heavy muscled. Let me stop all that and tell you, I love them wide skeletoned. I like that skeletal foundation from the ground up to be really wide because it does a couple things. Typically, those animals are efficient in terms of feed. They're efficient in terms of growth. And they tend to be sounder over the duration of their life. Now, I'm not talking about he gets outside of his skeleton when I'm cramming him with every additive in the world for 30 days. I'm talking about the duration of their life. Because, and I want you to think of it this way, Matt, and this is how I would explain it to kids. Think of a coffee table, an end table, okay? A nightstand next to your bed. Well, imagine jamming them legs as close to the center as you can. And then trying to set a bunch of heavy stuff on top. Well, every time I go to reach for my alarm clock to hit snooze 4 or 5 times in the morning, it's going to knock the whole thing over. If I take those legs and I put them out at the corners and I make that foundation wider, there's just more natural stability there. And I can put more stuff on it. And in livestock, that means if it's a female, she can handle more rib, more body, more belly, and stay sound. In the market animals that she will produce, guess what I can do, Matt? If I've got a big wide tabletop with a big wide foundational square dimension of width, I can hang more product on that without it getting goofy and wobbly and skeleton going bad. And so I like that whole skeleton to be pried open and wide because it creates such a better foundation to build off of in terms of weight, in terms of size, pounds, product, all of that cool stuff that we like. Nothing will make an animal go from sound to not sound than one that's really skeletal and narrow. Now, I'm not just talking about skinny in terms of condition. I'm talking about narrow and trying to feed product onto them. Because let's be honest, there's probably enough products out there on the market today. I can make a light muscled one super hydrated or bulky beyond probably what is good for their skeletal framework. But if I start off wide, I don't have to use as much of that stuff. I can do that with kind of just simple nutrition and some protein and just add some texture to that muscle fiber, hydrate it, bring it up a little bit, and add definition and shape. And so for me, got to cover the basics. Got to be wide enough, got to be stout enough, got to have enough growth. Got to have a good enough skeleton in terms of joint angles, feet and legs to stay sound. But then I like to wrap them up in some pretty paper and make them look like a show animal.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I like how you talked about bells and whistles and balance. And when I think about that balance, I think of, hey, Frosty the Snowman. You turn Frosty the Snowman over on the side, he's not going to balance up very well. He's going to have a big old booty. He's going to have not enough center body, and it's just not going to balance very well. So what we want to do is we want to have equal parts, make sure that everything's balanced, have enough center body, have enough width front and behind. And if we can put a neat, cool front, attractive front end on them, that's a bell and whistle that I love to have.
Me too. Me too, Matt. Hopefully that answers Aaron's question. There's a lot of stuff we could talk about. We could probably devote 2 or 3 episodes just talking about what we look for. And we talked about steers. It's universal, really. Build them good. Make them wide enough. Put some grow in them. Put some just practical, functional pieces on that animal first, regardless of species. Then add your extras. Then take out your fancy paintbrush and start creating cool parts of them pretty soon. Regardless of what you're trying to make, you're going to be making good ones.
After this week, I might have to get a whole new canvas and a whole new paintbrush and
hey, I've done all that out before.
All again.
We, you know this story, but years ago, we raised hogs and raised them at our school farm, and the kids were heavily involved in all that. We liked that. That was good. It wasn't economically feasible enough to continue, so we got out of it. So I started raising some pigs. And I can tell you, sometimes as a producer, the best thing you can do is wipe the slate clean.
Yes.
Start again. Because it got to a point, and I do think if people are honest with themselves, it happens sometimes. Because, hey, sometimes genetics don't work like we want them to, or like we anticipate they're going to. Sometimes they don't feed out quite like they're expected. Sometimes things just go wrong in terms of getting them bred, getting them settled, getting the number of pigs that you, or whatever offspring, you know, getting the number of pregnancies you need. And all of a sudden you're kind of out of sorts, and you look and you go, hey, I wouldn't buy these things. They're not the kind of animals I would want. I don't know why I'm continuing to produce this kind. And sometimes you need an overhaul. And we did that here a few years ago, kind of got out of it. And now we've jumped back in and are trying to create some of those. But it's, you and I both know, it's not an overnight. Nothing that you want to do like that is happens very rapidly. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it takes a few generations or a few years of peace and imparting some things before you kind of land on the one that you're like, that's the one I was trying to make. Now let's go from there. And so that, but also, what fun would it be if that wasn't what it is? You know, if you just went out and said, hey, I'm going to buy 20 bred sows and every pig I raise is going to go win a major somewhere. Oh, don't get me wrong. That'd be pretty darn fun.
It'd be fun. It's not.
But trying to replicate that might be hard.
For sure. Unless you win the lottery.
That's true. You know, I always see those memes. If I win the lottery, I won't tell anybody, but you'll know
it.
That's right. I've got a plan. I can tell you what size barn, the kind of pens.
Well, a new trailer would be the first thing I have to get.
Well, I can tell you, buddy, I was coming home from Kansas. We went down to Kansas to film a contest this week, and I'm really excited about that. Shout out to Hutchison Community College and Kane Austin down there, who hollered at us and let us come in and video. Great contest. It was fun. But on my trip back from Kansas, I looked down at my odometer and realized that in 479 miles, the old Dodge is going to turn over 300,000 miles.
Wow.
So at some point, a new truck might be in the Beards and Banners agenda.
Yeah, I would think so. Because she can't go forever.
No, unfortunately, I don't think they make them to go forever. And probably at 300,000, I'm already on potentially borrowed time.
Hey, well, Luke Combs says that a good truck will go 300,000 miles. So, according to his song, I think you got at least 475 miles left, right?
Yeah, I think by the time I get done with next weekend, we'll be past that.
Ooh, well, good luck.
You know, Matt, we talked last week a little bit about Christmas, played a little reindeer games, talked a little bit about some Christmas music. Thought this week we'd dive off a little deeper, talk a little bit about songs that we love that mean Christmas time to us. And like I said earlier, I downloaded a whole playlist of Christmas songs. Some of them are classics, standards of Christmas that I'm sure everybody knows. And a few of them might be a little more niche, maybe stuff that maybe just I'm a weirdo and listen to. And that's okay. But I want to know, what are some songs that just instantly mean Christmas time to you?
There's one, Happy Christmas by John Lennon. It's the War is Over one.
Yeah.
Just a beautiful song. And that is the one that I always hope to hear at least once or twice a week right before Christmas season starts. My dad loved that song, and you could always tell, like, it was December growing up when that song started to come on every once in a while, and oh man, it just still gets me. So, and sometimes I don't get to hear it nearly enough, so I have to ask Alexa to play it. So if you want a good one, Happy Christmas, War is Over by John Lennon. It is aces.
I think that's a good one. That's a great pick. Matt, you got anything else?
You know, I don't know. There's a little song called Baby, It's Cold Outside.
That is
a good one. I don't know how ethical it is, but it's pretty good.
You know, I'm not going to lie to you. I love that song. Always have. I don't know why. I've always liked that one. And it's on my Christmas playlist, even though in today's world, maybe that would be viewed as not politically correct. Here's how I look at it. I think when people listen to that song, they're not really listening to it. If it bothers them, if it offends them, if you offend you, hey, that's cool. Don't listen to it. That's awesome. I get it. There's songs I don't like too. But you have to remember that song was made in a completely different time. Not that what they think it means is okay at any time, because it's not. But what I mean by that is it was made at a time where probably, and it just speaks to, you know, different generations, a single girl being over at a guy's house, having a night out, not married. That was controversial. That was a controversial thing. And if you listen to what she says, you know, her sister's going to be questioning her. Her brother's going to be waiting up. Her maiden aunt is, her mind is vicious. There's going to be talk. She's worried about her reputation, really, is what that song is about. And even though probably she wants to be, if you listen to the song, she wants to be there. But she's worried about what people are going to say. So leads me to the next point. Hey, who cares what people say, right?
Ooh, yeah. If only it was that easy. I like it.
Yeah. Now, if you can figure out how to not care what people say, feel free to message me and let me know your secret.
And write a book.
You'll be a millionaire. That's right. I love that song, though, Matt.
Is that on your playlist?
It is on my playlist. Like, it's probably like in the top two or three, Mariah Carey being, you know, like All I Want for Christmas Is You is right at the top. And then,
you know, if I could win the lottery and have her sing it to you on this podcast, boy, I would do it in a heartbeat. Cause I don't know if you could take it. I think you would try. I would be willing to give it a try.
I don't know what would happen there. You know,
off the podcast and just say, have a one-on-one.
Matt, you're fired. Mariah and I will take it from here. I firmly believe that at some point, she probably is probably singing that directly to me, or at least in my head, that's how it goes. Any other ones, Matt, that you really like or think people would like out there?
Well, I talked about White Christmas last time.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really good one. I have a guilty pleasure, I guess.
Okay.
The Alvin and the Chipmunks. I like to hear that once a year.
Christmas time is here.
Yes, sir. I'm embarrassed to say it, but boy, just one time. Just give it to me one time a year. Let me hear that thing. Yeah. And it's good stuff. It is good.
Well, there's some good ones. And like we said, there's some classics. There's stuff that I can tell you, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas by Frank Sinatra.
Oh, man, that's so good.
It's such a good one. I hear that one, Silver Bells. Always makes me think of, you know, when I was a little kid and we'd have to, seem like at Christmas time, you'd have to run, you know, and of course, you know, growing up, at least once a year, we'd drive into either St. Joseph, or we'd drive down to Kansas City, we'd look at Christmas lights. And so it seemed like that always makes me think of that when I was a little kid. And I think that's the power of Christmas songs, really, if we stop and think about it, is the nostalgia that goes along with them and makes you kind of remember those times
growing
when
up.
You were young. Yeah.
Yeah. And those memories you had. And
yeah.
The excitement. You
know, now, I will tell you, the one that maybe is a guilty pleasure for me, kind of like we talked about with the movies and Christmas Vacation. I can't even call it a guilty pleasure. Like it's pretty much my whole personality at Christmas time. I love Merry Christmas from the Family by Robert Earl Keen. If you haven't heard that one, give it a listen. If you grew up out in the sticks or in the boonies or a little bit low class, that one probably speaks to you a little bit. And so I like that one a whole bunch. That's a good one. I'll also tell you, and I don't think a lot of people have heard this one. If you haven't heard this one, give it a listen. Are you an Alan Jackson fan?
Love Matt? Him.
I love Alan him. Jackson. Again, you got to go back a little ways. Alan Jackson, man, there was a time he was metal. He had the gas.
He right? is one of the purest country music singers.
Oh yeah, back if you
could possibly be.
When people talk about 90s country, and there's a lot of stuff you see on social media, man, 90s country was so good. Alan Jackson was such a huge part of that, that 90s country, early 2000s. There's a song he sings called Let It Be Christmas. Let It Be Christmas by Alan Jackson. And I'm telling you, like, so good. It's such a good, Alan Jackson's voice is great. Like, it's a great message. It's a great song. Every time I hear it, gives me goosebumps, instantly thinking. And it's more recent, obviously, but man, I really like that one.
Oh, it's so, I thank you for sharing that. That's great. You know, the reason for the season is Jesus Christ. And I will tell you that, Oh Holy Night, sang the right way on Christmas Eve, there's just nothing but, like, almost brings tears to your eyes.
Like,
so good.
Somebody hits the right notes on that one at midnight mass. You talk about it hair stand up on the back of your neck.
It really is. And it makes you think, and it makes you really kind of dig deep a little bit and help you understand a little bit more about the meaning and, you know, kind of center you a little bit. And I think that's important around Christmas time. And hopefully you can find some time to listen to that, listeners, because, oh, it's that song for me that kind of is the, signifies, hey, let's stop a second, let's remember what we're here for, and push pause a little bit. It's yep. good.
You know, Matt, last week on last episode, we played a little game, reindeer games. You came
you
up
did
with some
really
reindeer
well.
Trivia. Hey, I feel like I should get some sort of a badge to put on my coat or something for being sort of a reindeer aficionado, which I was completely unaware that I was leading up to that game. I'm going to be honest with you.
I had more than five or six listeners reach out to me and say there is no way that he knew all those answers.
We can verify.
No, he did.
I did not know the questions ahead of time. I was lucky. I wish I would have been that lucky guessing on tests when I was in college. The game tonight, Matt, there's a lot of debate. We talked about Christmas movies. You talked about some, especially some classics you love. I talked about, in my mind, a classic, and like we said, Christmas Vacation, pretty much my personality this time of year. But there's a fringe, what we'll call a fringe set of quote-unquote Christmas movies that people debate all the time. Is it a Christmas movie? Or is it not a Christmas movie?
Ooh, I like
so
that.
I'm going to throw some movies out there to you, Matt, and we're going to get Matt's unbiased, unwavering, unadulterated opinion on are these Christmas movies or not. And I'll tell you, here's a disclaimer, kids. There's always a disclaimer when I start this stuff. These are all older movies. Not going to say everybody's seen them. Matt, we talk about nostalgia a lot on here because it's, you know, when you get old like us, you start thinking about when you were young. It feels like when we were young, Matt, a lot of the movies you watched were set at Christmas time. They had a Christmas setting. And so thus sparks this debate of these movies that happened in, let's say, the 80s and 90s that were big hits that weren't necessarily considered a Christmas movie, but now people debate, are they a Christmas movie or not? Do you watch them at Christmas? Are they a Christmas movie? So we're going to go through that list. Okay. The first movie I'm going to ask you about, Matt, set at Christmas time, is it a Christmas movie? Lethal Weapon with Mel Gibson and Danny Glover, the original Lethal Weapon, the first one that came out. What's your take?
Well, first, I remember that one well. And I remember being a 10-year-old boy that was pretty excited to see that, like, over the couch watching it while my parents were watching it, and like I was watching that thing, and it was so good, and I really enjoyed that. And you know, if it's set at Christmas time and there's Christmas decorations and it comes out around Christmas, I think that one qualifies as a Christmas movie for me.
I like it, Matt. I like that take, and I kind of share your opinion. Not only do they, one of the first scenes happens at a Christmas tree lot. The whole thing kind of centers around Christmas time. I'll tell you real quick, one of the things that hooked me into Lethal Weapon right off the bat is that Mel Gibson's character in the movie drives a four-door dually. Oh. And so in my head, I was like, I think that's the first time I'd ever seen a four-door dually in a movie, you know? And as a kid growing up,
probably the only time.
Yeah, might have been. Well, he drives one, and I think the first one and the second one, he drives a dually also. And so as a kid, being a little kid and kind of growing up around livestock and around horse folks and all that stuff, you saw those all the time, but you didn't see them represented, you know, in movies. And so to me, it was just really cool, you know, to see that second one. Got the second one for you. And if you grew up in the 80s, kind of like we did, this name will be familiar to you. Rambo, First Blood, very first Rambo movie, based off of a book, actually. The only Rambo movie that's actually based off of a novel, off of a character. Sylvester Stallone, probably at his one of his most classic roles, Rambo. Rambo First Blood, is it a Christmas movie?
I have to be honest. I have probably not watched that in over 27 years.
It's an old one. It may be the oldest one. I would suppose the oldest one on our list.
Yes, I would think so. And I also think, you know, when I go back to that other movie that we just talked about, Lethal Weapon, I can remember it being Christmassy.
Yeah.
I don't remember a whole lot of Christmas trees in the jungle. And in the fight scenes and all those different things that were going on in Rambo, I would skeptically say no on that one.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't think you're alone. I think popular opinion via the research I was able to do on the internet, which we all know, kids, if it's on the internet, it's probably 100% true. I think you're in the majority of folks that maybe number one are surprised when that gets associated with Christmas. I looked up, I actually rewatched that movie the other day when I got this idea. And I can tell you the only real reference to Christmas, when he's in the town, because he comes into the town, of course, they kind of, you know, take him to jail and stuff. And then it's about him evading the kind of corrupt police force. When he's in the little town, there's some Christmas decorations up on their main street. And then when he, at the end, when he has the big shootout at the police station, there's a Christmas tree, there's some Christmas deck, but that's really about the only reference. And so, hey, we don't know. Maybe it could have been January, February, and they're just lazy about taking their decorations down. Doesn't have much to do with Christmas, maybe. Okay, number three. Batman Returns. Batman Returns. Older movie, came out, I think, in the early 90s for sure. I think Michael Keaton as Batman, which for me kind of will always be sort of my Batman. As much as I like some of the new Batman movies, I'm Batman. And I just, it doesn't get better than that. I'm Batman. It's not the graveler, I'm Batman. Like, I'm Batman. Just cool, suave, how Batman should be in my head. Batman Returns, Michael Keaton. That was the one where Michelle Pfeiffer was Catwoman. Okay. And kind of, that was kind of the, I think maybe that was the last time during that run that Michael Keaton played Batman. And so what's your thoughts there, Matt? Set at Christmas.
I think it qualifies.
Hey, all right.
You know, like you talk about a lonely woman at Christmas time with her cats. Yep,
with her cats. Okay. Danny DeVito,
who plays
the penguin. Who doesn't like Danny DeVito? Probably. I would guess if they made a movie about my life, they could probably use AI to de-age Danny DeVito, and it would be pretty close. That or Zach Galifianakis, maybe from The Hangover. Either of those, probably on the short list.
Yeah, I liked that movie a lot. I thought it was really good, and could spend a whole episode talking about Batman.
Oh, man.
He is the best. And the people that they've had playing them over the years have been hit or miss, in my opinion.
A little bit, yeah.
But these last few Batman have been intense.
Whole different tone, right?
Not very intense. At you for 2.5 hours. Like it used to have one climax scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's like seven, and you're like worn out. Like,
yeah.
Like, hey, can we take an intermission? Because, hey, my heart's pumping.
It's just too much.
And I look down, I'm like, there's an hour of this thing left.
Right. That's like, the other thing is, let's go. I like my Michael Keaton Batman versions because comes in, he's Bruce Wayne, he puts on the suit, he's Batman, bippity boppity boom, and an hour and a half later, you're out of there.
Yeah.
New Batman's like, we got to go to the Himalayas, and we go over here to this place, and we're doing this. And
Bangkok, fight this guy. And
we got tanks, and we're fighting villains I've never heard of. And I'm like you. My whole heart gets a thumping, and I look down, and I'm like, there's still 2.5 hours left of this movie. What else are they going to do? Is Batman going to go to space now? I just don't understand some of it. Don't get me wrong, though.
To the Maverick movie, though, Top Gun Maverick, that – those last few, I just didn't want them to end.
And oh my gosh.
I can't believe this is still going. It's so exciting. And that's how Maverick was for me.
We have to talk about that sometime, Matt, because I think most folks, specifically probably men our age, okay? If you grew up when we grew up and didn't pretend you were Maverick as a kid, didn't do the over and under high five at some point.
Yeah.
Imagine yourself playing beach volleyball in a pair of jeans, which is the least practical thing to play volleyball in.
It does not compute.
Or think about becoming a fighter pilot. Because of that movie, you're probably lying just a little bit. It was such a huge part of our childhood. And then that Maverick, Top Gun Maverick, I'm not going to lie to you. I went into the theater to see it twice. I went with my family. We went and watched it, and I almost got emotional. Like when the opening credits start, I'm like, I've waited for this.
Oh yeah. So long.
I liked it so much, Matt. You're going to love this story. I liked that movie so much.
Did you go alone?
I was judging a show.
Yes.
And I was judging a show, and we judged like sheep. Show started at 10. We're done at like 1:30. I was judging the cattle show, but it didn't start till 7 o'clock that night.
Oh, you had nothing to do.
I had nothing to do. And I found a movie theater and I went and watched Top Gun Maverick again.
Did you get some popcorn?
I did. I had popcorn. I actually had nachos, I think. I had nachos. It was one of them nice ones. It was hot that day, and it was one of them nice, like the full recliner seats.
Oh, they're so good. You can take a nap if you want.
Now, I'll also tell you that the people in the seats closest to me probably were not as excited about the movie-going experience that day as I was, because I don't think I cleaned my boots off very well when I went in. And I would suppose there was some remnants of some sheep poop, maybe a little hog poop from the night before. When I went in there and propped my old feet up on the recliner and kicked back and watched that movie again. But it's a class, not a Christmas movie. We got a little sidetrack. That's okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Home Alone, Matt. Home Alone.
100%.
And 100% of Christmas.
100% yes. It is a winner chicken dinner. And it is easily one of my most favorite ones because it brings us back to childhood. It kind of you know, you can always picture yourself. And I was that kid that was like, man, what would I do? Like,
oh, yeah.
What traps would I set? Like, and when you think about it, there's a Simpsons episode that like reenacts it. And then like, what should they have done? They probably just should have shot him.
Yeah. Like, have you ever seen them? The show Mythbusters used to be a big deal, and I loved it. I get into that kind of stuff. They did an episode about all of the injuries and how much damage those burglars in Home Alone actually would have sustained, and they never would have made it through.
They
wouldn't have,
yeah, they would have been never. So concussed.
But hey, I'll also tell you
quickly, what is your favorite trap he set?
I think the paint cans when he swings the paint, which is the worst one. I mean, it's the deadliest one. But when they get up there and he swings in paint cans and knocks the first guy down, and then the second guy lands on top, he's like, "You're missing a tooth." And he's got, I'm like, you know, I've always tried to avoid a life of crime. Me too. I would anticipate that if I ever kind of let my morals slip, that would probably be more close to my criminal experience than some of the glamorous heist movies like Ocean's 11, that kind of stuff. I can see myself being the one that gets my tooth knocked out with a paint can because an 11-year-old kid outsmarted me.
Bearded bandit.
We could be the bearded bandits, Matt. Maybe this is a discussion we should have off air. I don't know. For all of our law enforcement friends out there,
Considering anything, actually.
We are not considering robbing banks or people's homes. Okay.
We are considering becoming Batman. I would love to have that Batmobile.
I think we would have to, my personal opinion, we'd have to shave the beards to be Batman. Because I think the beards at this point are too recognizable. And that's the part of your face that's exposed to Batman.
That's like, skunk beard. I've seen that before.
That's right. That's Matt McCrory. That's not Batman. Matt McCrory is Batman.
I am.
And you have to come up with a unique Batman voice. I'm Batman. Not
I'm Batman.
Like, has to be suave and smooth. But your Batman can be whatever, you know.
It wouldn't be that last one. That was pretty weak.
Okay. Here is number five, and probably gets the most attention and the most controversial. Is it a Christmas movie? Matt, I think you know where I'm going. Listeners, I think you know where I'm going. Die Hard.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Bruce Willis. That one.
Remember being so excited during that movie when you were a kid? Like, and I can't remember like how old I was, but I was probably 12 or 13. And just watching that movie and like, from the time he lands, just everything about, and I'm a Bruce Willis fan. Like, I've always loved him. And everything about that, and he's just so tough, and he had so much riz about him. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, I just wanted to be him so much. And then him going through there around Christmas time, seeing his wife, you know, he just wanted to reconcile. And
that's all he wanted to do.
Get through it, but there was a lot that went into it, and I think it was a great Christmas movie, and I think it definitely is in that category for me.
It is, me too, Matt, and I know there's people that will disagree with this. That's not a Christmas movie. I can tell you, I saw on social media a guy with a guy that had a sweatshirt that said, "Now I have a machine gun, ho, ho, ho," like he writes on the guy. And I'm like, I know exactly what that is. I got the reference. It's Die Hard. Exactly. It's a Christmas movie. I will tell you, I'm on board, Matt, 100%. I think Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Christmas at the Nakatomi Plaza. And the other thing, here's a little bit of trivia. I did a little research on this. Die Hard, they think, saw theory, was so popular and was such a hit because of the same things that you and I just said. Bruce Willis at the time wasn't viewed as an action star. He wasn't a great big chiseled muscular, because if you stop and think about the two main action stars in that era, it's not like it is today. Back then, action stars had a certain look, a certain physique, and they were kind of it was a genre to itself. And so when we think of like Sylvester Stallone, right? Like Rocky and Rambo, we think of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
For sure.
Predator, Terminator, all those kind of movies. And here's Bruce Willis, who's just kind of the average guy and basically just has to escape and evade these people that are trying to take this building over the whole time. And I love it because from an early age, I went, there's a guy with William's luck. That's what this movie is really about. Like, the guy just wants to take his shoes off and relax after his flight. He's out here reconciled his wife. His wife's not necessarily in on the reconcile plan. The guy just wants to get over his jet lag. Boom. Terrorist. Has to run through broken glasses, bare feet. He has to
climb
up elevator shafts. He keeps getting the heck knocked out of it. It, to me, it'll always be a Christmas movie.
I'm going to have to watch it. Well, you know, there's a lot of similarities between Home Alone and Die Hard.
If you yes, think there about is. It,
okay, both based on Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
All right. They're both trying to reconcile or get back to the woman they love.
Correct.
Both witty Irishmen.
I like that. Now you're speaking the language. They both have
family issues. All right. Villains attack during Christmas time. And they have incompetent dispatchers who will not go check up on them like they should. And yep. It's the same movie, just a different plot.
And at the end, both are saved by kind of a sub character, bystander character.
Unlikely heroes.
Unlikely heroes. The old man with the shovel in Home Alone and the police officer that got his car shot
the
up.
Family Guy. You gotta like that guy.
For me, Matt, it gets 4 Christmas trees out of 4 Christmas trees. It's a Christmas movie.
That is a good rating scale.
You like that?
I like that.
I was inspired by the hat. I was inspired by your hat.
Thank you very much. Listeners, my wife purchased a beautiful, well, I would say it's beautiful. Not on the most beautiful head, but
it's very sparkly, Matt.
Beautiful Christmas tree hat that I'm wearing today. And it has lights, and I can change the amount of lights flickering. I can change the amount of, like, they can just be a solid light form. It can be whatever. And
viewers, for those of you that can't see Matt, the hat, think of like a wizard hat, sort of.
Yes.
Kind of a cone-shaped, but it is covered in green tinsel, much like a Christmas tree, and has ornaments and lights on it. So essentially, Matt has a Christmas tree on his head.
Yes. Yes. It doesn't feel like a Christmas tree because it's lined with a nice little liner.
Is it comfortable?
Don't worry about my head itching. We are fine there.
Nice. I like it.
Hey, speaking of presents under a tree.
You got my attention again.
There's a couple things I want to talk about regarding Santa Claus. So the logistics behind Santa Claus is pretty unbelievable. There's more than 2 billion children out there.
That is a lot. That is a big number.
There are 575,000 stops approximately that he has to make. That is more than 20 million stops per hour.
Oh.
And do you know how much his sleigh would have to weigh in order for him to be able to carry all those presents?
An astronomical amount. I'm going to put it somewhere around what the estimate of the Great Pyramid is, probably.
550 million tons.
That's a lot of tons.
Now, I'm going to let you in on a secret. There was a Christmas movie a couple of years ago that came out that kind of said how it works. Basically, it's a smaller bag.
Like a portal to Santa's workshop, where he reaches in and just that present comes out?
He has a portal to Santa's workshop, and he can just reach in, comes right out. He can just present them as he goes. It's pretty remarkable.
Can I get one of those bags, Matt, for my feed room? So that, because I can tell you,
it never runs out.
When I go get 500 pounds of feed, it takes me all day. I don't know. I need one of those magic bags in my feed room. Bippity boppity, game on.
Hey, ask your Santa or your sun glow Santa to provide that. And
I am writing that down as we speak. Note to Santa, bring feed additives.
And got kids it. That are listening, because we have some kids that had a little bit of feedback. There are little Santa mailboxes positioned in counties that you could go to and drop your
letter to Santa.
Letter, and it goes straight to the North Pole.
That is handy information. Matt, when it comes time for Santa, are you a milk and cookies guy? You like to leave the cookies out?
Well,
milk and cookies for Santa, or is Santa at in your house more into, let's say, like spare ribs or pizza?
You know, we have been cookies for a long, long time, but we are kind of going to transition over this year. You know, he needs some protein to help him out a little bit, and go with a few chicken wings.
Oh,
and maybe a small half glass of Pepsi Cola would be good. But my family, we're really big on the Santa reindeer snacks.
Okay.
We're tell animal me more lovers. About that. You know, animal husbandry runs in my family. So we really take care of those animals, and we have a lot of little celery and carrot sticks and some apple slices for those reindeer. And
I like it.
They gobble them up. So don't forget.
I bet the reindeer appreciate it too.
They do. And you know what? They don't leave droppings on our house if you leave them some snacks.
How about, Matt? This is, I will tell you, I'm ignorant of this, so I'm hoping you can give me some information. Listeners, if you can explain this process to me, I'm all ears. Elf on a shelf. I want to know more about it. The elf on the shelf never happened in my house. Just never had an elf here, I guess. So tell me about the elf on a shelf. Do you guys, is the McCrory household an elf on a shelf household?
For sure. Rosa is her name.
Okay.
And she is an amazing elf who my kids have a very good relationship with and greet her every morning in a different spot in the house. And she's always watching. And it's amazing to me that my boys get any presents sometimes at all. Because it's like boys, I have three sons, guys, and it's like they have magnets and they can't separate. And like, you can't pull them apart. If you pull them apart, they just come back together. And like, I think that you could drop them off on three parts of the county and say, and within 2 hours, they would just meet. Like, they wouldn't know where each other are, and they would find each other and wrestle. Like, it is that much. So yes, but ours is Rosa. She's fantastic. There's actually some apps out there, parents, that you could catch your Rosa or your elf on the shelf at night and see her in action. If you look up these apps, it's pretty cool.
I've seen some pictures and stuff on social media where sometimes those elves are doing nice things and sometimes those elves are being a little bit naughty. I'll also tell you, or I get a question, I guess, again. So let's say at the McCrory household, and I want to hear from our listeners on this one too. If, let's say, the boys end up on the naughty list, what happens? I'm guessing the elf's in charge of looking after them here. So what do they get? Do they get like a lump of coal? What happens there?
See, it was explained to me by my wife that presents would still come, but Santa has ordered mom to withhold the presents from being played with if they're not being nice.
So then you just got to look at the you can't do anything with them. Like,
yeah. So that would be right. Great. I got a, new rope bat that I can play with and practice with, but I can't do it today, or my new AI dribbler. So
did you, growing up, Matt, was there an elf? Did you have an elf in the household?
Oh, no, I didn't either. We had nothing of the sorts.
My dad, I'll tell you, the big thing that kept me in line probably that time of the year when I was a kid is my dad would just say, well, if you're not good, instead of bringing presents, Santa will just bring you horse poop in a tin can, which that's not exactly how he phrased that. poop was not necessarily the word he used, but a horse poop in a tin can every year was what I was going to get for Christmas. Now, I don't think it ever actually happened, but that was always kind of what was there to keep me in line.
I know of someone that actually got coal one year.
Really?
And I will tell you that it scarred them. And they do everything in their power to make sure their kids never got coal
again. It would leave an impression, I think.
Because it was a bad deal, I think. And I don't think they've gotten over it. And it's been about 50 years. Yeah.
You know, Matt, it is Christmas time and people are wrapped up in, you know, what do I get for those people on my list?
Well, and the hardest person to buy for is that special woman in your life sometimes. So I've done a little bit of research and I'm pretty safe because my wife doesn't listen to the whole podcast a lot of times. So I have five pretty cool items that, guys, if you're looking for something to buy for your wife, you might dig in. So here's the very first one. Brian, I got to ask you, Joni, if you're asking her, hey, you won't go out for dinner, does she always have a place she'd like to go? Or is it very indecisive and like, I don't care? And then you bring something up and she's like, oh, I don't want that. And then you bring something else up and like, well, I don't want that. Like, well, just tell me what you do want. Well, I don't know.
Has I that think ever that's happened? I think that's a universal thing that so happens. Yes.
They have these dice that you can roll that are food decision dice. Oh. So you roll the dice and then it decides, hey, where you're going to go out to dinner. So it could say Mexican food, steaks, sushi, fast food, different things like that.
And well, I think that would make the deciding.
Yep. It could be a little fun.
Yeah. That's a good one.
And I've always heard on this little thing, like if you don't like the first one, you can roll again, but you got to stick with the second one. And that makes it a little, like, if you're not feeling sushi, I get it. Like, hey, I like sushi myself. I always said I would never like it, never eat it. Man, now it's my jam. It's so good. All right.
Or if you live where I live and there you roll sushi, no, you better head down to the local lake or creek, or there might be some sketchy gas station sushi maybe, yeah. But I don't know how well I'd trust that.
I have always heard those things don't really pan out very well. All right. The next one, my friend, is wool socks.
Wool socks. Now, that is not one I would have anticipated being on this list.
Believe it or not, having warm feet is very high on a lot of people's list. And having wool socks in the wintertime to be all cozy and watch some TV or watch some Christmas movies around Christmas time, or especially on Christmas morning.
Mm.
Okay. You can just put them right on. Those are really good kind of a side gift.
So these aren't necessarily put my wool socks on and go on an elk hunt type socks. No, they are put wool socks kind of
trendy
on.
Trendy.
Drink hot chocolate, watch the kids open presents, that sort of
some different colors, hot pink and different things like that. Really good stuff. The one I was really excited about, this Ninja line has a lot of different blenders and things. They have a new thing called the Ninja Ice Cream Maker.
Oh my. You had me an ice cream, man.
It's gas. It's awesome. It's not gas powered. It's electric.
Okay. Sorry there for just a second. I forgot our words of the day and I was like, so this is like a gas-powered ice cream maker.
Yep. Cool. Yep. And it is some cool stuff, and it will make your ice cream. And I think that might have to be something that we consider because I like some ice cream, and I know my family does too. All right. Now, we are here at Beards and Banners. We are doing our best to keep you as trendy as you can be.
That's correct.
The trendy thing right now among a lot of people in the United States are these Stanley tumblers.
Oh,
have
yeah.
You seen these?
Oh, I've seen them. I think everybody I know has one of those things.
Should be really giant wish
45-gallon Stanley cups.
I really wish we would have thought, hey, do you know what? Everybody needs a metal Stanley cup. And if we would have thought that and thought about that a long time ago, we could have Williams tumblers instead.
That's right.
Tumblers.
That's and, right.
You know, I think that just looks that Williams would look really good on a tumbler.
Or, you know, beards and banners.
Tumblers. Yes. B&B tumblers. I like
that's
it.
That's right.
But your wife could always use another color, a different tumbler, because it's almost like a, like some street cred. It's almost like the popularity. Like
you have to accessorize.
Look at their new tumbler.
They're not just for form and function. They are. They're
it's almost like a new
style of fashion state. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it is.
But I have one more.
Okay. So
there is something called a Himalayan salt lamp. And it's kind of trendy, and we have one, and it's supposed to balance the electrons in your house. It's supposed to decrease and calm down allergies. It's supposed to clean and deodorize the room, but it's also supposed to increase blood flow and boost your energy levels.
This sounds like something I need, man.
Yes, and my wife has a couple, and we plug them in every once in a while, and sometimes you can notice it. So sometimes there might be a little bit of head games there too. I don't know, but I know that they are pretty popular and a lot of people like them.
Well, I can tell you that previous to this conversation, I never worried about my electrons being out of balance.
Yeah, me either.
But that's certainly something that now is on my radar.
Yeah, I don't understand it at all. But I do understand what wool socks do.
I do know what wool socks do.
And I know how delicious ice cream is. So
I those am might be an ice cream my list. Fan. Well, that's great advice, Matt. And I think I can't give you any good advice at all. But I can give you a list of things probably to avoid.
Okay.
When purchasing presents for your significant other, try to stay away from clothes. Here's why. Their style versus your idea of style very rarely intersect.
Yes.
And the odds of purchasing a size
yep.
that is an instant argument starter.
Yes.
Either
it's too baggy and you think that they're larger than what you thought, or
right.
it's too tight and tears come and
right.
then you're like, wow, this went awry fast.
Try. Yeah. Like I was doing this to be nice, not to, make anyone feel bad about themselves mm-hmm. on Christmas morning. Second one, never buy power tools, really tools in general, unless specifically requested. Because let's face it, there are some handy women out there
mm-hmm.
who like to take charge, do their own thing. They probably have their own she shed filled with tools. And then I think that's okay. I think probably that's acceptable. But if your significant other has never asked for a cordless drill and you see one and go, you know, that would be really handy
for her
because of XYZ, you are wrong. Don't buy that.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever think, you know, there's a lot of talk about, oh, I need to get outside more. I need to get more of a tan. I wish I had something to do. And you, in your head, you think, I know, I'll buy a new weed eater for my significant other. That is also a bad plan. If you think, hey, you know what would be awesome is if my significant other didn't have to lug out the big vacuum sweeper.
Yes, that's my number one, I think.
And I'll buy one of those Roombas or whatever brand of little cleaning robot you want to get. Surprisingly, also not a popular
I'm going to say that my wife recently purchased one.
I think it's a good deal
if it's their idea.
If it's their idea. I want to do this because I want to do it, not, hey, I bought you this because, hint, hint, sweep the floor. Because I think that's how it gets taken sometimes.
Yeah, I could see that.
Now, we talked about winning the lottery, right? I wouldn't tell anybody, people know. If you want to be a hero, you know, and you're a big spender, got money burning a hole in your pocket, the NFR is going on right now in Vegas. There's a lot of significant others out there that would probably like a trip of some. Now, a trip to the local stock show so that they can wash and water and pick pins, probably not the same as
that's good.
A trip to Fiji or 3 days at Vegas at the NFR. Just some clarification on trips. For those of you that are wondering,
is this a trip for two or are we sending them alone?
You know, depending on the mental state of your significant other at times, that can be up for debate.
Yeah. And sometimes that might be their preference that you just stay at home.
That, that they get to go and you do not. But that's all I have. It's more of a don't do these things necessarily. Exercise equipment, unless specifically required. Oh, boy.
Even if they do request it, I don't know if it's a good idea.
It still might be pretty, maybe one of those deals where you go,
let's just go buy this together.
Yeah, you should go. We'll go. I'll take you to the local sporting goods store and you can pick out whatever you like. Not a, hey, Merry Christmas, here's a treadmill. Mm-hmm. Probably a high probability that gets taken the wrong way.
Ice cream makers don't get taken the wrong way.
No, they don't.
They don't. Hey, here's some more ice cream. Well, don't mind if I do.
Hey, I'll tell you another one that actually hardly ever gets taken the wrong way. A handmade, handwritten card. Something that you spend a little time on, get out the arts and crafts, write a nice message in there, give them a handmade card.
I like that.
Food for thought.
Handmade.
Do not put the card on a cordless drill.
Okay. I think that's, thank you for that wisdom.
You are welcome, man. Thank you.
I feel prepared, and I think our listeners do too for Christmas. We've talked a lot about the Christmas season, but we also need to talk about, our new livestock is going to be born here pretty soon, and we're going to have some lambs hitting the ground, and we're going to have some cattle hitting the ground pretty soon, and right now we're already pigging. So being able to be prepared for the upcoming farrowing or lambing season or calving season is of utmost importance. So we want to take a little bit of time today to talk about, let's just put some priorities in line and let's make this farrowing season, lambing season, kidding season, whatever, a little bit easier. Brian, what are some things that you like to have around this time of year?
You know, Matt, with my luck and knowing that at some point during the parturition process, things are going to go off the rails. You hope they don't, but inevitably, I don't know anybody who has any kind of a calving, farrowing, kidding, lambing season where something doesn't kind of go wrong at some point. My big thing is be prepared. And so what I mean by that is know those things are going to happen and have your facility, your area kind of set up for that and prepared to the best of your ability. And obviously there's differences in facilities and what we have to work with. But I'm a big believer in, you know, if you know that you're going to have medications that are a part of that process, whether it be oxytocin, whether it be penicillin, whether it's iron shots for baby pigs, whatever it may be, have that stuff there and readily accessible. Have a kit of some kind, a calving box or a farrowing box that's got the different needles that you need, the syringes you need, the different things that you need. Have your OB chains or your pig pullers or whatever you use right there in that area that are handy. Latex gloves, OB sleeves, lube, all that stuff right there where towels to dry stuff off, buckets to put water in to clean stuff up, clean bedding. Man, I think that gets overlooked sometimes. And then you're scrambling, oh man, I got to get some straw in that pen, or oh, I got to put some chips in there. Oh man, we're not quite ready in the firewood house and we got to get this thing power washed real quick. I'm a big believer when it comes to that time of the year, and granted, we're already in it, hot and heavy. We're not here at our house. I know you are. There's a lot of people, Matt, there's a lot of pigs on the ground right now. There's a lot of folks that in the sheep world that, you know, have had fall lambs already early. You know, they're trying to hit those older lamb markets. They're lambing out now. Goats, you know, are hitting the ground, you know, just crazy and steady through the fall. There's obviously some guys that fall calve and are getting a jump on those things being born. And certainly that'll hit a big push when we get in just past the first of the year and into the spring months. I just think that, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And that goes for when we're trying to have the next generation on the ground too. And I'll tell you, I wish I was better at it. Every year there's something that I find that I'm like, oh man, I wish I'd have had this, or I wish I'd have thought about that. You know, have those pens set up in a way that are accessible, or, you know, because I'll be honest with you, not everybody farrows in a crate when we're talking about hogs. We don't here, you know, and that's probably a shocker when I tell people that we don't use farrowing crates very often. And so we pig them in open pens and we crate stuff if it has to be. But I'm a believer in letting them farrow in a pen if we can. Now that it's a little more labor intensive. So some of the stuff we have to do in terms of pen setup and creep gates and hot box type stuff to get those pigs away from mama while she's still in labor, so that she's not, you know, getting pigs underneath her up and down and that kind of stuff. It's a little more labor intensive sometimes that way. But having that stuff set up and prepared and having a plan and being prepared is a huge, huge thing to me. And then I guess maybe in my mind, the big thing is that somewhere, maybe not every year, we hope it's not every year, but somewhere in every production scenario, you're going to need a veterinarian. You're going to run into a situation that you just cannot get yourself out of, that you need help and you need somebody professional to come in. Here's my advice. And if you're getting ready to have a calving season, if you're getting ready to really jump into the meat and potatoes of farrowing, if you're lambing or kidding right now, and you don't have a rapport or a relationship with a good vet, start now. We're hitting a time where if you don't have that and you just cold call those vets and it's 2 a.m, hey, I've got, you know, this cow's been in labor. I can get a back foot or a front foot, but I can't get anything else. We can't get her. We need a C-section. The odds of that person getting out of their bed and coming to you when they don't know you at 2 a.m. pretty low anymore. And so I would tell you, you know, have a good relationship with your veterinarian. Find a veterinarian you're comfortable with that's on the same page with you in terms of what you're trying to do, and build a rapport and a relationship with that person way ahead of those kidding, lambing, farrowing, or calving seasons, so that they know you more as just somebody desperate on the phone at 2 a.m.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, if you have the right vet and I have a good relationship with them, sometimes you can pre-plan a little bit with what needs to be ordered and what you have on hand. I know that within the first day, we're given iron shots and we're also given a half a cc of Exceed. And that is going to help do a lot of preventative stuff. But One thing I would like to say that I learned this week at actually a seminar called Passion for Pigs, a lot of America does not give enough iron.
Iron. Yeah.
And if you are not giving enough iron, what's going to happen is you're going to actually decrease the rate gain in the, or the weight of gain in the crate. And it'll also hinder it for the rest of its life. So if you are not giving a dose on day one and a dose on day seven, you're putting yourself at risk to put those animals behind. But one thing that I want to say is a lot of people aren't using enough iron. And if you're only giving one CC of iron 100, you're not giving enough. And what I learned this week is actually, if you can give 1.5 cc's, one cc in one side of the neck and another half cc in the other side of the neck on day one and day seven, you're actually going to increase the health of that animal, the pounds in the crate, and get it started to be more productive later on in life. It shocked me when they put the numbers up there about how much more performance you get out of those babies, they're giving it enough iron.
You know, Matt, it's funny you bring that up because I know we've had some litters in the past where I just feel like those pigs are a little bit lethargic. And there's times I blame that on, well, maybe, you know, it's a big litter. You know, they're struggling to get in there and get enough. Maybe it was a hard farrow and that sow struggled and we had to pull some pigs. And that's obviously, that's always a little hard and traumatic on them. And, or just simply maybe mama's not milking enough. But hearing that, you know, it would be interesting to me to see if that doesn't add a little more vigor to those pigs when they do get maybe the proper dosage of iron and they maybe helps their energy and their ability to get up there to the underline, get attached to a teat and stay on that teat longer.
I think so. And also having some preventive planning for that sow as well, because afterwards you're going to have to realize, hey, she could have an infection. She could have some things go wrong there and we need to treat her. Now, I have heard some horror stories and some really bad stories from friends that have had this happen. You know, I've always heard 1 in 100 sows are allergic to penicillin.
100%. I can verify. We lost a really, really good barra a couple of years ago and almost lost the gilt that goes on to win the American Royal that year.
No kidding.
We had two of them same year, same week that we killed a barra and almost lost that gilt over penicillin.
And I think that maybe having a little bit of test before you breed them as far as, hey, a CC of penicillin right before you start breeding season or when you get them home, just to kind of see how they react and then kind of taking some notes of it later on. And hey, you'll find out within two CCs if there's going to be a reaction.
Oh yeah.
There.
And for sure, I think to add to that, I think having epinephrine there on hand as part of your kind of calving or farrowing or whatever kind of box, I think is a big part. I think that's one of those things that probably should be in there in case of a reaction.
For sure. And there's a lot of different types of pig pullers and lamb pullers out there. And some people prefer the ones that are all metal and some like the little snare. And I know that personally, for me, the snare works a lot better if you can get that hold of that thing and kind of guide it in there. But the number one thing for me is, guys, we have to have a recruiting process and we have to have a skinny-handed, little-handed, long-armed somebody in our circle that can go up in there sometimes and pull them out. And
you and I have talked about that a lot because you and I, for as much as we like to farrow pigs, our hands and arms are not made to go in there and start pulling pigs. And when you and I have to do it, it's just going to cause so much more trauma to that sow and the survivability of those pigs. And sometimes then the survivability of the sow goes way down. And so I agree 100% with you. Have help, have somebody that can get in there and get those animals, especially on pigs, ewes, same way. Have somebody that can do that with, and cause the least amount of trauma to that animal that we can.
I agree. And what I notice is when I have to go in there and they're not big enough and things like that, you know, that swelling's going to happen that much earlier.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm going in there and if I can't get the snare working correctly and things like that. So having another hand literally sometimes is a really good thing, because you're exactly right. They can start to swell. And once that swell's closed, there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, then we're having a C-section. And we all know that those are pretty high in mortality rates for sure.
Yeah. There's, you know, on every species, but, you know, specifically hogs, when you have to start thinking about cutting those pigs out in terms of a cesarean, it's almost always a death sentence. And that's not surely not something we want, not something we're going for. Unfortunately, it does happen, but then we have to view that as a last resort, I think, in terms of, you know, what can we do? And I'll be honest with you, we had a sow last year that we knew had pigs in her. We could not get them out. And we ended up letting her try to pass them. We loaded her up with medicine. She did pass them. She did survive. Which I will be honest with you, was a surprise to me. Now, I will say that she did not rebreed this year.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there was just enough, number one, probably enough trauma trying to get those pigs out. And then number two, I think because of that, and then having those pigs in there, not being able to get them out, and not crossing the line over into a C-section. Not that we're not saying that sometimes it isn't 100% necessary, but we were doing our best to try to save her and not do that. I think ultimately it cost us that sow anyway, because I think that she just probably was never going to breed back again. But yeah, I agree 100% with you, Matt. I think, you know, going through there, making sure that we've got our dosages correct, looking at, you know, not just randomly find information, but find information that we know and trust from somebody, from your local veterinarian, from trusted sources that give us kind of some, and those things are, you know, we talk about a lot of this in the show world. That information's out there. It's readily available if you look for it. It may be the most readily available it's ever been. And regardless of your species, you know, talk to those people that you know are good at it, kind of have it down to a science in terms of, these are the things that I do that I need on hand. These are the process by which I should be going through. And really it's something that anybody can do. Now, it'll wear you out. And there's a lot of obviously sleepless nights and times where you're going to spend time in the cabin barn or in the farrow house or in the lambing pen, trying to get those things going. And hey, let's be honest. Some mothers are way better than others.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those processes are way easier than others. And also, you know, not everybody has generational lines always. Obviously you're breeding to different things. Sometimes you're bringing other genetics in that you're not as familiar with. Do your best to get the real scoop on, you know, how maternal are those lines really, and try to set yourself up at least to be, like I said, be prepared. And, you know, I can tell you, when we sell gilts, if they ask, I always tell, hey, that's a great mama. That's a great maternal line. Like, she lays down, they'll have lots of pigs. They milk like a Holstein cow. And if we sell something out of, hey, well, here, I'll be honest with you. Yep. Her mama was not a great mama. She didn't milk good. She, you know, be prepared, because in my mind, it's a lot easier if you tell those folks, mm-hmm. you know, because usually those are questions that are asked later. That's not always what somebody's going to ask you when they're determining if they're going to buy that gilt. If they're buying show gilts, they're buying a show gilt. The vast majority, I'm not going to say nobody,
mm-hmm.
but the vast majority of people that are buying those are buying them as a show project. They're not necessarily worried about the maternal aspect or the maternal outcome of putting that female into production, which is probably something we should all be thinking about, but I think gets glanced over at times. But do your best to do your research and homework on, you know, if you are going to ferret those things out, or if you are going to calve out a female, or those type of things, you know, what's that maternal line like? Because there's a reason we keep records and data on that stuff, is because it is genetic and it does carry through a little bit.
It absolutely does. And unfortunately, it doesn't always work out.
It's true.
That is the one question that I always ask. I'll ask some sort of a question about, hey, did her mom have farrowing issues?
Mastitis.
How'd things go? And a lot of times, more times than not, they'll be honest. And sometimes it works out. I know the one that we lost actually 2 days ago averages 13 a litter. And she had 14, got them all out. And then 8 hours later, she did not make it. And it was a tough time, which I do want to talk about this really quickly. This summer and this spring, when you are buying those lambs and those pigs and those goats, and in the next fall or this spring when you're buying that, your next steer, just remember, these things aren't that easy to create. They aren't that easy to get out. And if they were, everybody'd be doing it.
That's right.
Understand, hey, why does that bear cost $1,000? Or why is Joe Schmo over here selling that pig for $75 and you're selling this bear for $1,075? There is some differences in preparation. There is some differences in how much work had to go into it. And I guarantee you, there's probably a lot of differences in input costs in terms of semen, feed, vaccination protocol, and things like that. Just to have a sow around full year anymore is more than $500. And
yeah,
people don't understand that aspect of it either.
Yeah, that's, you know, and we'll be pig specific here for a second. You know, there's no, well, we'll turn her out on grass and let nature feed her for, you know, 3 months in the hog meal. And that girl eats, she eats some sort of concentrator feed every single day of her life, every day you own her. And so the feed cost on that deal is not an insignificant part of what goes on. And then when you look across species at semen costs, hog semen's high. It's expensive. And to get those things, you know, and I'll be honest with you, I'm the world's worst when I look at those sales and go, oh my God, I can't believe these pigs are bringing that. I can't believe they're, you know, but I'll also tell you, I do see the other end of it. And, you know, the cost that you've got in those baby pigs before anybody ever bids on them in an online sale, you know, is probably right at the opening bid, if not maybe a little more than the opening
bid.
You're
exactly right.
You know, in terms of, you know, and I guess that's always the thing that, you know, we've been that family over the years that, you know, comes in after the sale or whatever. Well, there's no sale. I'll give you $150 for that pig, or I'll give you $200 or whatever. Just know that producer's doing that just so he doesn't have to feed him anymore.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily he's making money on that animal. Mm-hmm. Or she, they're doing that just to get them off their feed bill. Because as we know also, once those hit the ground and we start putting some feed in there in the creep feeders, and then we take them off mama and we have to start the full responsibility of their nutrition, it gets expensive. It gets expensive to get those things from weaning to sale day is a huge expense.
And I think that's something that we can continue to talk about. And if you have any questions on how to be more productive and, you know, have some more parturition preparation, I think that we would love to go into some more depth and answer these questions, because I think we have a lot of new farrowers this year. We have a lot of people that are lambing for the first time. If we can be of any assistance, please reach out, because there's not a stupid question for us.
And we like to help our listeners, and we like it when you guys help each other. And so if you've got good tips or tricks, if you want to share, hey, this is something that's in my calving box, or something that's in my farrowing barn that I think everybody should have, or this is something I've done that works incredibly well for me, We want to hear that stuff. We'll share it as quick as we can. And so let us know that stuff. Reach out to us on social media, either on Snapchat or Instagram or Facebook, and give us that stuff. We'd love to hear from you.
For sure. Now, to kind of switch gears a little bit, if you don't mind, I want to talk about one of our good listeners that just started opening up our Beards and Banners podcast this week. And his name is Derek, and he's from Pike County, Missouri, and which is our county fair. And he is one of the superintendents there and does a phenomenal job. A couple of years ago, he was diagnosed with cancer, and he went through some rough battle. And he has made it through once, and he's been diagnosed again, and he's got another uphill climb, but he has the most positive attitude of any person that I've ever met. And he mentioned a few things today that I wanted to mention, and we're going to dedicate our Who's Your Daddy to Mr. Derek from Pike County, Missouri. So Derek, he mentioned a Chester boar. He's a Chester enthusiast. He always has been showing them since he was a young man. He mentioned the boar from Premium Blend Genetics called Box Office. And boy, has that guy put some good ones out there. That Chester boar, I think he was a Knees Hog. And he is a stud. And he has put some really good ones out there. We've had some really good litters out of Box Office. He makes them stout. He makes them big hipped with a little bit of look, a lot of back shape. I tell you what, man, Derek, we couldn't agree with you more. We're right on that.
That's right. And we're glad to hear from Derek. We're glad to hear Derek's story. And we really appreciate the input on the Who's Your Daddy segment.
Yes. And he shared with some things with us that I think are pretty good. And we'd like to end today with a motivational message. And this one actually comes from Derek himself. And I love this one. And when you think about just having positivity in life and, you know, during this calving, lambing, and pigging season, it's not easy. But he always says this, being positive won't guarantee you'll succeed, but being negative will guarantee you'll fail.
I like that.
And I know right now, this week, my dollars were down, and I can guarantee you I've heard some horror stories about some other people that are in lambing season and pigging season right now that it's just not going very well. Don't get too down. The lows are going to be pretty low, but the highs are also going to be ahead of you. And sometimes you don't know how close you are to success.
Right.
And just keep that in mind. And, you know, I think coming from a guy like Derek, who's been battling cancer for the last few years and be able to have a positive mindset, boy, I couldn't be happier to share that message with you guys today. And, you know, be positive on the outlook. Tomorrow can be a good day. Today can get better. And there are good things around the horizon.
That's right, Matt. I love that message. It's just, I think all too often, all of us are guilty probably of looking at what's right in front of our face and being negative and looking at some of the outcomes that aren't what we hoped and think, well, it just, you know, it couldn't get worse. Things are down. It's not going good. And I can tell you, it's easy to spiral when that happens. It's easy then to only see the negatives. You just have to do your best to shake it off and know that the sun's going to come up again tomorrow. It's a whole nother chance, a whole nother opportunity, and maybe it'll be a little bit better. We're going to keep our eyes on the horizon and look at what's coming. And because like you said, you just never know how close you are to really finding the success that you've been driving towards. And you got to just keep believing in what you're doing and that you're on the right road. And if you see that you're not, it's okay to change lanes. It's okay to redirect and find the road that takes you to where you need to go. And I think that's a great message. We appreciate Derek sharing that with us. You know, that's one of my favorite things, Matt, maybe that's come out of this podcast is some of the messages that we get and the positive outlooks that we get from folks about kind of our ending segment every episode, which is kind of that motivational, inspirational kind of talk at the end. People seem to like it, and I can tell you, I like it. I enjoy it just because it kind of gets me going for another week, makes me kind of put things in perspective and not focus on just the immediate crisis or the immediate downfall that's right in front of my face, but look a little more outward and what's down the road and maybe good things to come. Love it.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, let's continue to look out for each other. Let's continue to look out for our friends.
And just like every week, be nice.
Hey, great episode. Thanks for being our friend. Merry Christmas to everybody. We'll see you soon.
You bet. We'll see you guys on the next episode.